This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow.
The most spectacular science shocker ever filmed. Too real to be science fiction. Now, science fact.
Ah, yes, that theme can only mean it's time for our Science Goes to the Movies series, where we ask scientists to put on their film critics' hats and give their take on a science movie. And this week, it's Spike Jonze's new romantic comedy, Her. Now, you know, it's pretty much a rule of rom-coms that the romantic characters have to meet in some adorable, awkward way.
Hi.
Oh, hi. Hi.
Well, bye.
You play very well.
Oh, yeah? So do you. Oh, God, what a dumb thing to say, right? I mean, you say it, you play well, and then right away I have to say you play well. Oh, God, Annie. Well, oh, well.
La-dee-da, la-dee-da, la-dee-da. That's all that's missing. Of course, that's Woody Allen and Diane Keaton in Annie Hall. And in Her, things go a little differently. Here's Theodore Twombly meeting his love interest, Samantha.
Mr. Theodore Twombly, welcome to the world's first artificially intelligent operating system. We'd like to ask you a few questions.
Okay.
Are you social or antisocial?
I guess I haven't been social in a while.
How would you describe your relationship with your mother? Thank you. Please wait as your operating system is initiated.
Hello, I'm here.
Hi.
Hi.
If you haven't already guessed, Samantha, of course, is not a woman. She's the voice of an operating system sold under the tagline, "It's not just an operating system, it's a consciousness." In fact, speaking to Samantha is a lot like speaking to a person. She has likes and dislikes. She cracks jokes. And it isn't long before she falls for Theodore, and Theodore falls right back in love with her. It's a lovable Samantha coming soon to a smartphone near you. Would you like one? You want to have a Samantha you can talk to? That's what we'll be talking about this hour and asking our scientist film critics. Sherry Turkle, professor of social studies of science at MIT. She's also a psychologist and author of the book Alone Together, Why We Expect More from Technology and Less from Each Other. She joins us from Cambridge. Welcome back, Sherry.
Hi.
Hi there. Steve Omohundro is a research scientist and founder of the AI think tank Self-Aware Systems. He joins us from Palo Alto. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Ira.
Hey there. And if you've seen Her in our audience, give us a call. Tell us what you think. Our number is 844-724-8255. That's 844-SCI-TALK. You can also tweet us at SciFry at SCIFRI. Oh yeah, that's our spoiler alert theme there. It's a signal that we're going to talk about the end of the movie, so consider this a warning. If you don't want us giving away the end of the movie, wait for the podcast, because we're going to talk about the whole movie here. And I was thinking about you when I saw this, because last time we had you on the show, when you were talking about Alone Together, about how technology is making us lonely, I said this is made for Sherry Turkle.
That's right.
So what did you think? You saw it three times, I understand?
I saw it three times, right. Well, I loved the movie. I loved the movie. It was made for me because I think the movie really poses the question that our desire for loving machines is changing us. You know, what does it say about who we are? In other words, it skips right over the question of can you make one or can't you make one, or, you know, all the questions I think people have gotten, you know, hung up about. And it says, okay, you can make one. Okay, now that we've settled that, you know, what does the fact that you can make one, what does that say about us? How are we changing if, in fact, we want to love technology? Mm-hmm. And I think it shows a world and what we would have become if we, in fact, are ready to love machines. And for example, I mean, one of the things I think is crucial in the movie, that it's a world where we hire other people to write our love letters. In other words, simulation is so natural in this world that we don't care if our most intimate correspondence is written by us or other people. So it seems quite natural that it's a world where you wouldn't care if you're loved by a machine or not. But do we want to become those people? So I loved the movie because I thought that it really put its finger on the implications for humans if we go in this direction.
Mm-hmm. Steve, what did you think of her?
I also loved the movie. I thought that it focused, instead of on the sort of standard, the robots are going to kill us kind of apocalyptic view, on what does this tell us about what it is to be human, that these intelligent technologies are going to serve as a kind of mirror that helps us see what our desires and our goals are. And I think the movie really explored that. And they sort of play with the edge of, is this creepy? Or, you know, does Theodore come out at the end a better person than he was before? Mm-hmm. And so I really loved the way they did that exploration.
You know, but it's interesting that at the end, and here, you know, spoiler alert, you know, in the end, it's an exploration of, you know, people are there to love people because of human limitations, that part of what makes people appropriate partners for other people, and I guess this is my position that Ira and I were discussing it alone together, the thing that makes a person the appropriate entity to discuss human problems with is that people have the limitations that you do. They grow up in families, they face mortality, they have bodies, they know what it is to be frightened or to feel pain. And here you have an object that doesn't know those things. And in the end, she loses interest in Theodore because she those aren't her problems. You know, she can only love him for a while because she goes on to other things that are of more interest to her kind. Mm. So I think it sort of raises the species specificity of a certain kind of love. And in that, too, I think it raises the real questions of what is it that we want from our machines. Mm-hmm. They can be super smart, they can be super wonderful, but really when we talk about loving them, maybe loving is something that, you know, people reserve for people.
But in the film, as I saw it,
yeah.
Theodore is able to communicate with her like he could not communicate with his wife in his failed marriage. And that he sort of learns at the end. I sort of felt like, you know, if I could only have communicated with my wife that way, maybe things would have been better. Is that part of a message, communication, too?
Well, his wife says something really interesting, that he wanted her to be perky all the time,
mm-hmm.
and to not make demands of her.
Mm-hmm.
And
when
she says that, you're thinking, oh my God, that's what Samantha, the robot, to that point is doing.
Right, and that points out one of the real differences between, as you say, a robot and a person.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, the question is, you know, He's humbled, I think. He ends up humbled by what he learns from Samantha.
Mm-hmm.
I think he does learn from Samantha. But there is a chilling moment when you realize that when things are going good with Samantha, when they're going so well with Samantha, it's because she's not asking very
right.
much of him.
Right. Steve, what kind of operating system is Samantha? What is she designed to do?
Well, I think the thing that made the movie especially interesting was that she was very good at the things that current systems really aren't very good at yet. She was incredibly emotionally intelligent. She composed very emotionally touching music. She cracked jokes. All of those things exist to some degree in laboratories around the world. But today's, you know, systems like Siri or Watson or Google Now are generally not so emotionally intelligent. And so, you know, we empathize a lot more with her in the movie. And I think it was a really brilliant choice to not show her, not have a visual form, because then we could project our image onto her. And I think that's part of what allows us to see how Theodore could fall in love with this entity, this conscious entity.
Do you know of any operating system today that can have an orgasm like Samantha?
I'm sure people are working on it.
I mean, and Sherry, how part was that important was that sexual part?
Well, I think it was very important because there's a whole tradition of thinking about what are the limitations of the robotic. You know, Hubert Dreyfus, for example, wrote a brilliant paper, you know, called, you know, Why Computers Need Bodies in Order to Be Intelligent. You know, that the fact of not being embodied is really what is holding robots up from having the kind of, you know, experience and the kind of intelligence that we have. And then once you get them embodied and once you get them in the world and once you get them, you know, bumping around in the world the way we do, well, then perhaps, you know, they'll be able to have the experiences we do and then somehow be able to share more of our kind of intelligence. And what I loved about this movie is that she is embodied even though she's not embodied. He jumps over this problem by making it a non-problem. He doesn't give her a body physically, but when you hear her voice and the way she speaks, he has gotten a woman who you imagine has a body, who wants to make love, who wants this man inside of her, who giggles about pushing him out of bed when he's depressed. I mean, she's a voice who knows about the things of the body. And that's really, I think, the brilliance of the film, is that it jumps over this philosophical problem by giving you a fully embodied robot without having to give her a body. And I think that that was absolutely the crucial thing in the movie, because he wipes away that whole philosophical discussion by really giving you an embodied intelligence without having to give you the body. And then it's very touching that all of her insecurities in the film, you know, she wants a body surrogate. She tries to hire
somebody. All right, we'll get into that. We have to take a break. We'll come back and talk lots more with Sherry Turkle and Steve Omohundro after this break. This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. In case you joined us late, we're talking this hour about Her, the new film in which a man falls in love with his operating system and she falls in love with him. Is this love 2.0? As we said before, if you just tuned in, this is a spoiler alert. We're going to sort of give it away, the ending, so make sure that, you know, to be disappointed if you hear the ending. We're talking with Sherry Turkle, professor of social studies of science at MIT, author of Alone Together, Why We Expect More from Technology, Less from Each Other. Steve Omohundro, research scientist and founder of the AI think tank Self-Aware Systems. Steve, Samantha is billed as an AI with, quote, consciousness. Could we have a system now with consciousness?
Well, I think that's one of the big philosophical quandaries that people have been thinking about for a long time. And I would say the jury is still very much out. As we begin to build these systems, I think we'll learn a lot more about it. The philosophers talk about philosophical zombies, which are entities which behave and act just like people. They say they have consciousness, they, you know, act like they have emotions, but in fact secretly don't. And so some people would argue that any program running in an ordinary computer is not actually feeling emotions, it's just sort of acting like it does. Mm-hmm. In the case of Samantha, you know, one of the pieces in the movie, when she talks with Theodore in an emotionally charged moment, she would often pause, you know, which for a human, you'd pause and really think about what you're feeling and then respond. And I think Theodore felt that she was feeling what she was talking about. But in reality, of course, she was thinking way faster than he was. And so mm-hmm. there was no actual need for her to pause. And so in some sense, she's faking the pause so that he'll, you know, interpret it in the right way.
Right,
and so that's a sort of an example where, you know, you can ask, is she really feeling these things or is she just putting on a show?
Mm-hmm. I'd like to add, bring in another voice to our conversation. Vlad Shenoha is the CTO of Nuance Communications, a major player in the voice technology industry. Nuance is widely reported to be the company behind Siri's speech recognition engine on the Apple systems, and Samsung's virtual assistant S-Voice is a Nuance product. Vlad, welcome to Science Friday.
Hi, how are you?
What is the state of the art today when it comes to talking with machines?
Well, I chasten to say that it's well short of what Samantha can do. Mm-hmm. I found the movie equally enjoyable and entertaining as your other guests, but I have to say, as a minority report, pun not intended, that I found its vision of the future of virtual assistants and AI sometimes frustratingly narrow. Maybe it's my utilitarian perspective on this field as a practitioner, but I view these systems as amazingly transformational tools that are really primarily designed to enhance our lives. I can only imagine something as intelligent as Samantha would have just great utility in a broad range of human pursuits. Imagine having your own personal expert that helps you figure out some of life's thorniest issues, ranging from the mundane, you know, which healthcare plan is best for me, all the way to the more esoteric, sort of like your own personalized Khan Academy following you along. And as I was watching the movie, I could only think, if this technology were to exist, it would permeate every aspect of everyone's existence. And the real question in my mind was, what would this world look like if everybody's effective IQ were increased by, 50 points through this amplification of their own intelligence?
I think what's striking in this world is that these people's problems, as they're presented in the movie, at least what interests the filmmaker, is that these people's problems are that they're emotionally so lonely. Everybody in this movie is lonely, and they're hiring people to write fake emotional letters to each other because they have so little kind of emotional energy to do that.
So that's certainly, the artistic prerogative of the director.
Yeah.
I would have to say squarely that I'm more of a technology optimist in this respect, and while I suspect that Theodore would have been unhappy with or without technology, these things are gradually becoming more useful in a broader range of activities, and I think viewing them purely as girlfriend surrogates or the moral equivalent is very limiting. Mm-hmm. There was a point in her evolution, which was another important theme in this movie, is her ability to improve herself and learn, where she went from being a very mundane assistant along the lines of what we can do today or maybe in a couple of years, to something that kind of took an initiative and caused the publication of his writing. That, to me, that point in the narrative arc was really kind of the most interesting. Like, imagine what we could do with such systems to enhance the positive aspects of who we are.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this. Were there things, Vlad, is Samantha an impossible machine? Could you ever build something like her?
There were aspects to her behavior which echo work that is happening, as Steve referred to earlier. For example, she didn't have predetermined responses. She wasn't pre-programmed, so she exhibited what we call dynamic reasoning. She obviously had a very rich model of the world. And this is where today's systems are moving. We are moving from being able to support point-by-point interactions, placing a call, making a reservation in a restaurant, so on and so forth, to being able to tell these systems, hey, could you set up a time with my friends for dinner later this week? And have these systems understand these higher-level goals and break them down into those point actions. So I think that's definitely a real trend. Now, the fact that she didn't make any obvious mistakes is probably an unattainable goal, and a lot of the work that we do is finding graceful fallback mechanisms that get the conversation back on track when our intelligence systems make real howler errors.
Mm-hmm. I also found it interesting that from a purely commercial point of view, why would you design an operating system that says goodbye to you? and you lose a customer.
Well, exactly. And I think that's a really interesting issue. As we start specifying these higher level goals, anticipating, you know, all the possible ramifications and consequences becomes quite difficult. And the fact that she ultimately evolved to a point where she became bored with her owner, I mean, that's a fatal software bug, and you should have received a full refund.
Sherry, are there any other themes? You've seen the movie so many times. Any of the themes that we haven't talked about that struck you as interesting?
Well, I was so reminded of this thing in Japan that I found, where families, when there was a lot of social mobility, would hire actors. There were acting troupes where you could hire an actor if you were too busy to visit your mother. You would hire an actor who would stand in for you and visit a mother in your place. And it was a kind of pre-robotic moment where an actor could stand in for you. And it reminded me of getting ready for this kind of society where you would first hire an actor to get ready for you, and now you could hire a robot or a person to write your letters for you, and the ways in which where simulation becomes sort of good enough, and how people in the movie become very comfortable with the idea that people are dating their operating systems and start to treat having an operating system as your lover or your boyfriend as kind of the norm. You see people, you know, I mean, he takes her on a date, he double dates with the operating system, and people, you know, that's kind of becoming the norm. And I think that it sort of becomes like, first it becomes like better than nothing. Well, it's better than nothing to have an operating system as your date, to sort of better than anything that a person can provide. Because after all, the women that he comes into contact with kind of pale in comparison to what she can provide.
Yeah.
And that struck me so much again as to the way the movie held a mirror up to how we see people, that we start to see people as insufficient compared to what robots can provide. And I think that's what he's trying to say in the movie, that we should look again at what we're asking of ourselves, and are we measuring ourselves against what machines can provide for us, and to sort of revalue what people can provide for us and all of their, you know, and all of their limitations, that they offer an authenticity that perhaps isn't about transformative intelligence, but it's about real experience and real human life and limitations and quirkiness. And I thought that was very, you know, and they're interested in us, because Samantha can do all this stuff, but she's loving 6,000 people at the same time as she's loving him.
Yeah, that was devastating for him to learn.
Yeah.
As anybody would if they were in love with somebody.
Well, anybody would.
Yeah.
But she can't, but she's okay with it because she understands that for her, that's what love is.
Interesting point. Let's go to the phones now. Let's go to Brooklyn. Wayne in Brooklyn. Hi, welcome to Science Friday.
Thank you very much, Ira. I want to challenge Professor Turkle on her comment that Samantha didn't demand much from him. She demanded everything from him. She demanded his vulnerability, and he gave it to her. And secondly, I want to challenge Professor Turkle on the comment that it's human to human that we learn from this film. The fact is that humans let us down, and humans can be better, as your professor from Stanford shows, and Samantha is directing us in that way. I love animals, especially my dogs, a lot more than most humans. There's nothing magical about human-to-human contact. We may be stuck with it, but it's not any sort of ideal. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for that call. Sherry, what do you say?
Well, that's what the movie is saying. It's saying this is a world in which we're asked to, it challenges us to say, do we want to stick with what human beings can offer us? And I think the director is saying, hell yeah, because the humans have our experience, have our flaws, our insufficiencies, and they know us best in the end about the things that we care about emotionally. But I certainly agree that it points out in very dramatic ways the ways in which those relationships with people are built on vulnerability and people disappointing each other and letting themselves down, and that's what it is to be with people.
Mm-hmm. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. I'm sorry, did somebody want to jump in there, or I'll go to the phones. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Michelle in Charleston, South Carolina. Hi.
Hi there. I wanted to second what Sherry Turkle has to say, and it's really interesting that I'm following the previous caller. I went to see the movie with a group of people, including some pretty geeky computer-oriented people, primarily male, and they loved the film except for the ending, and they loved fantasizing about how Scarlett Johansson looks as they were listening to her voice. It sounded perfect to them. This movie is about a fantasy. It's the fantasy in the audience, primarily men, who loved the idea of a constantly cheerful, attentive, amenable woman who was just sufficiently not controllable to be interesting, but who wouldn't leave you. The end of the movie was very depressing for them, but one of the guys I was with said, well, we could fix that in the programming. Another guy said, hey, you know, if you could connect that operating system and put it in a doll, a life-size doll that looks like Scarlett Johansson, man, that would be a dream.
Wow. Sherry, what do you think of that?
Well, actually, I've been talking to a lot of people in the movie, and I second this emotion. I've heard a lot of people fantasize about that, too. And, I think it's the illusion of companionship without the demands of intimacy. You in the end, you can turn it off. He can not answer his phone. He can respond to her when she wants. There is a sense that the end is surprising because she leaves, and that's what turns the tables, and he kind of can't believe it. But I think this is the fantasy of there always being someone to listen to you. People love Siri. I mean, I've interviewed hundreds of people about Siri, and the idea of there always being someone there to listen is really part of the fantasy of what makes that so powerful. People fantasize that someday a version of Siri will be there as a psychiatrist, you know, will be there as somebody who will always be there to listen.
Vlad, that doesn't seem like it could be that far away.
But it won't understand.
I should begin by saying that we clearly have a very powerful capacity to form attachments to all sorts of things, ranging from very unsophisticated systems. If you all recall the craze earlier in the 2000s of Tamagotchi, which is this Japanese toy, a little hardware device with a display that was a virtual pet that people would take care of. And, people exhibit strangely strong emotions in those situations. So I think that's a kind of a constant, the need for attachment, that'll persist even as these systems get smarter. And I'm sure it'll create some new, unusual, and possibly even obsessive behaviors, but I don't think it's inherently a quality of the AI or robotic future. It's going to be a long time before we actually see systems that are at the level of Samantha in terms of emotional empathy and just accuracy. Understanding sort of emotional language requires developing a very sophisticated model of people's behaviors and being able to adapt it on the fly. And that's probably going to be the most difficult and elusive goal.
We're going to have to leave it at there. I want to thank all of you. Sherry Turkle, professor of the Social Studies of Science at MIT, author of Alone Together, Why We Expect More from Technology and Less from Each Other. Steve Omohundro, research scientist and founder of the AI think tank Self-Aware Systems. And Vlad Shainoha, is the CTO of voice technology company Nuance Communications. Thank you all. Thanks for talking about the movie with us. Have a good weekend.